Chariots of the Gods by Eric von Daniken. Narrated by William DeFreeze. Copyright 1968 by Eric von Daniken. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with John W. White Literary Agency and was produced in the year 2011 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Keep listening after Chariots of the Gods for a bonus interview with author Eric von Daniken. Foreword. It was more than a quarter of a century ago, in February 1968, that my first book, Memories of the Future, was published by Aecon, a German publisher. I had written the book 2 years earlier, but rejection letters from publishers fluttered on my desk with great regularity. Sorry, not usable for our program. We are very sorry. We don't want to go this way. We recommend a more esoteric publisher. In later years, I was often asked how this publishing miracle happened. To finally place this controversial work with a renowned textbook house. Today I can finally confess, with outside help and a little discretion. I met Dr. Thomas von Randau, then the science editor of the weekly Die Zeit, in the summer of 1967. He leafed through the neatly typed manuscript, examined some of the peculiar pictures, and decided, "This is not for us. You have to publish it as a book." And how does one find a publisher? Dr. von Randau puffed on his pipe, looked me straight in the eyes. "I do know a publisher. I could just give him a noncommittal call if you wish." He picked up the telephone and asked to be connected with Dr. Erwin Barth von Werenalp, the chief of Aecon Publishing. The blood rushed to my head. After all, I knew what Dr. von Randau could not know. My manuscript had already been turned down by Aecon. Naturally, the ensuing conversation stuck in my gray brain cells. "I have in front of me a young Swiss who wrote a totally mad book. But the guy is not mad. Maybe you should listen to him yourself." The person on the other end of the line wanted to know if I could come to his office promptly. Could I? I told myself that the boss of a large publishing house could not know what his junior staff had earlier decided about my manuscript. The deal was closed after lunch with a young editor. The manuscript would have to be slightly reworked and would be published in the spring of 1968. We only had a conflict about one point. "Memories of the Future is an impossible title. One can't remember the future," the editor argued. But I remained stubborn and refused any change of title. In 1969, it was renamed Chariots of the Gods by my British publisher, Souvenir Press, and has since become world famous by that title, so I shall use it from here on. What Chariots of the Gods meant to me was described in an introduction that is also part of this edition. The book caused an avalanche. 2 years after its publication, 30 printings totaling 600,000 copies had been issued. In 1969, a film with the same title was released, which reached American television in 1970. That created a new virus, Danekenitis, time. The theme became a worldwide topic of conversation. Did our forebears receive a visit from the universe? By the time the book had been on the market for 3 years, it had been sold in 28 languages and was published in 36 countries. With the success came the critique. Professor Ernst von Koehn collected articles by 17 scientists in the book Were the Gods Astronauts? Some of the articles were strongly critical, some favorable. Since that day, counterbooks sprouted from the ground on all continents, as if a warm rain had fallen. Some swamp flowers were among them. I was accused of plagiarism and unscientific ideas, also anti-religious bias and ignorance of scientifically established facts. What has remained after all these years? Have I really spread nonsense? I wrote about the maps of the Turkish admiral Piri Reis, which can still be admired in the Topkapi Palace in Istanbul. The coasts of both North and South America are drawn with precision. This statement was wrong. Actually, the contours of North and South America are only faintly visible. This accepted correction does not distract from the sensational character of the Piri Reis map, because this map also shows exactly the coastal lines of Antarctica, which today are still buried under eternal ice. I did write then that the Upper Egyptian Isle, Elephantine, got its name because, seen from the air, it shows the form of an elephant. This information was completely wrong. Or I speculated that the sun door, which is mentioned in the Gilgamesh epic, could be identical to the sun door of Tiahuanaco in the highlands of Bolivia. Total poppycock. The gate of the sun at Tiahuanaco got its name only during the last century. What it was thousands of years ago, nobody knows. I also wrote, "What a miracle is the five-strand fantastic necklace of green jade in the burial pyramid of Tikal in Guatemala. A miracle because the jade comes from China." It was a false miracle that I transmitted. The jade came from Central America. With regard to the future, I wrote, "The Mars timetable is here. The Mars spaceship is constructed. It only needs to be built." The statement, written in 1966, was then correct. The Mars timetable, however, was thrown out by NASA for financial or other reasons. It is the right of all beginners to be so free, trusting, and not so self-critical as their elders. Often my enthusiasm got the better of me, or I accepted second-hand information. And then again, I trusted the information of a science writer only to be told later that the view of this clever man had been refuted a long time ago. I was promptly hung by those of contrary opinion as refuted. But these refutations amounted to no more than contrary opinion. It got even worse when some theses that I had never said or written were refuted. These true and admitted errors in Chariots of the Gods were unable to destroy either the basic theory or derived ideas. Here I hear a contradiction. This von Daniken was really disproved long ago. Here are some examples. Dr. Johannes Fiebig, the natural scientist, has collected them, and they were published in the German magazine Ancient Skies, number 6, 1991. Published by the Ancient Astronaut Society, post fac, ch-3803, Beatenburg, Switzerland. See page Roman numeral 16 for the address of the American edition. Let's take as an example the German professor Herbert Willemy. Willemy studied geography, geology, political economy, and ethnology, and has been a professor in Kiel, Stuttgart, and Tübingen. His world renown as a scientist is certainly well-founded, and his book, The World of the Maya, is counted among the standard works of Mayan studies. But let's look a little closer at Chapter 8 in his book, Foreign Influences on the Maya Civilization, Speculations About Earlier Seafarers and Astronauts. Willemy writes, "Von Daniken's astronaut gods came more than 10,000 years ago in giant spaceships from the universe." And Erich von Daniken connected, with their landing on Earth, the peninsula of Yucatan in two places in his book, Palenque and La Venta. With this sentence alone, the grave mistake in Willemy's work becomes clear. In 1981, he quotes only Chariots of the Gods and Return to the Stars, published in the U.S. as Gods from Outer Space, published in 1968 and 1969. Even in his second revised edition of 1989, Willemy did not change anything. Later works by me and other authors passed him by without a trace, especially my Maya book published in 1984, The Day the Gods Came. In no other field of science could one cite 21-year-old works and ignore later publications by the same author. Willemy commits a second error in his claim of exclusive truth for his point of view. He critically takes apart, piece by piece, my description of a worked-over monolith in La Venta. I had written, "There stands a carefully worked monolith, on which a snake, or rather a dragon, is featured. A man sits inside the animal. The soles of his feet push pedals. The left hand rests on a switchgear. The head is covered by a tightly fitting helmet. On his lips rests an instrument which can be identified as a microphone. Villamy comments, "Von Daniken's pictorial reproduction has unfortunately some technical flaws and does not, in comparison to the original at Villa Hermosa, permit realization that it is not a dragon, but an enormous snake which guards a sarcophagus or a burial chamber with a crouching body." Actually, some of the attributes, such as the rattle on its tail, do point to an enormous snake, but does this unambiguously indicate presentation of a corpse? Are there also, in scientific publications, technical printing faults, which led other archaeologists to recognize in that figure the well-known god Kukulcan? They do not consider him dead and in a burial chamber, but alive. He waves an aspergillum. An aspergill or aspergillum is a brush used to scatter holy water. Newspapers readily accept the welcome retort in spite of this openly visible error in argumentation. Hans Schoenfeld wrote, for instance, in the Berliner Zeitung, December 13, 1989, "Now it goes with full force against the science fiction author," meaning me. "He starts with his proofs that the extraterrestrial spaceship Voyager visited our Earth more than 10,000 years ago, but the dragon monolith described by him is just 2,000 to 3,000 years old." Eric von Daniken's correction, where did I date the Leventa monolith as 10,000 years old, was never published by the paper. Self-corrections are obviously made neither here, Villamy, nor there, Berliner Zeitung. This is further reinforced in another case which is offered by Villamy to his readers, Palenque. The tombstone of Palenque has often been cited and interpreted in many ways. Villamy, however, presents his own version, pertaining to the corn deity Yum Cax, as the proven interpretation. He claims that I manipulate my reader suggestively, since I look at the tombstone from the wrong side, namely, that is, the broadside. The position of the plate in the small burial chamber and the total combination of the relief do not allow any doubt that the narrow side was the viewer's side. Only from that view does the presentation of the relief make sense. If it were not meant so seriously, one would have to break into Homeric laughter. By the time of the start of the manned spacecraft, even Villamy would have to have realized that the viewing angle of the relief presentation propagandized by him looks even more like an astronaut flying through the universe. So who manipulates whom? A last point should be mentioned here to show us how an established scientist can be critical toward others, however uncritical toward himself. Villamy writes, "Just an example of Eric von Daniken's lack of literary knowledge. He talks of the sacred cenote in Chichen Itza and of the second not too distant one from which the inhabitants of the ceremonial center collected their utility water. They resemble each other strikingly, even on the height of the water level. Without any question, both are wells of the same age and probably owe their existence to the impact of meteorites. The mysterious veil which is spread over the long-established fact is a crack-brained invention by von Daniken. The cenotes are not caused by meteor impacts, but by a breakthrough of the tops of karst caverns, which are widely spread through northern Yucatan. The creation of cenotes has been known since 1910. All the important surveys of the Mayan civilization list these in an unambiguously scientific way." Only one thing seems clear. Even renowned scientists err badly, however vociferously they proclaim these statements. The cenote denial of Villamy shows this in a dramatic fashion. What is it all about? 66 million years ago, at the turn between the Cretaceous and the Tertiary periods, the dinosaurs, and with them three-quarters of the known fauna, became extinct. The end came suddenly. The majority of the geologists concerned with this problem assume today that the impact of enormous meteorites so deeply harmed the environment, soot particles in the air, drop of temperature, vaporized rocks causing acid rain, etc., for thousands of years, that it resulted in extinction of the fauna. What was missing for a long time was the discovery of the possible sites of the enormous meteorites. Since early 1991, this seems to have been discovered. Where? In the Yucatan. Geologists have even before that time discovered huge deposits of rubble and melted rocks in the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary sediment in the Caribbean. One could therefore conclude that the corresponding crater could not be far away. One must therefore presume that it would be on the bottom of the ocean, or south of Cuba. But then the NASA satellite photo of 1987 brought home this sensation. Through them, it has been possible to reconstruct the water supply system of the Maya and to reveal a half-circle of about 200 kilometers of cenotes, karst holes or dolinas. Today, geologists are certain that this ring, including the cenotes of Chichen Itza, formed the rim of the gigantic impact structure. Only one thing seems clearly known. The water can circulate much better in the rocks, lying below and totally crushed, which leads to the dissolution of the limestone above, which was created only after the impact and the cenotes were created. The Sheikh Salub crater, named after the little village near Merida in the center of the structure, is now considered the number one candidate in the search for the cause of the extinction of the Saurians. In contrast to the suggestions by Villamy, my writing is totally correct. He only writes, "It is possible that we owe their existence to the impact of the meteorites, and not that they are." A polymath like Villamy could, of course, not have anticipated what the cenotes would turn out to be, but this example shows in truly classical manner how quickly so-called truth proved to be an error, while speculative assumptions, even by non-scientists, can prove to be close to the truth. Such is the interpolation of Dr. Johannes Fiebach. Am I embittered and worn down by the overdrawn and mendacious critics of the last quarter century? In no way. I learned a great deal from criticism. Often it was correct and put some ideas into reasonable relationships. Besides, it was not only criticism that pelted me. Books were published by scientific sources, Prodonikin books, and numerous articles in many languages. My archives are full of them. Too bad that some media sources remained stuck in their prejudices. It is also so sad that many scientists, authors, and copywriters gathered honey from my books without honestly listing the source. I have personally written, since Chariots of the Gods, 20 more books, all of which are concerned with the same themes. The untroubled interest by readers in Gods from Outer Space caused every one of my successive titles to appear on the bestseller list of Germany's Der Spiegel. The Ancient Astronaut Society, AAS, was founded in the United States in 1973 by Chicago attorney Gene M. Phillips as a nonprofit organization to deal with my themes. For information, write to Ancient Astronaut Society, 1921 St. John's Avenue, Highland Park, Illinois, 60035-3105. There are now 10,000 members worldwide. Dr. Luis Nevilla of the New York Institute of Technology writes, "If you examine the hypothesis with an unprejudiced and open attitude, you will soon find that nothing in this hypothesis contravenes the strictest rules of science and our present understanding of the universe. The great merit of Eric von Daniken consists in his bringing to attention innumerable archaeological, cultural, historical, and religious phenomena, which suddenly make sense if one takes into consideration the possibility of extraterrestrial visitors. And this is exactly what one expects from a reasonable and plausible hypothesis." Bearing precisely on that matter, the Sanskrit scholar Dr. Dilip Kumar Kanjilal, professor of Sanskrit and Indology at the Sanskrit College of Calcutta, brought this observation forward. "It can be doubtlessly proven from old Indic texts that the earth had been visited and influenced by extraterrestrials in remotest antiquity." So it stands. Erich von Daniken, Beatenburg, Switzerland, June 1995.